Take her gun.
Angie pointed the Glock at Delilah's head.
Try it.
Dale told Angie,
You shoot her, I shoot you. I still get what I want because I got your daughter, and you know what I can do to your grandson.
Angie's determination wavered.
Joe. She had to think about Joe.
If she thought about what Dale would do to Anthony, she wouldn't make it through the night.
Dale said, Dee, take the gun away from her.
Delilah limped over. Her hand reached out, but Angie threw the Glock across the parking lot.
Shit, Dale said. Go get the gun.
I don't need no gun.
Delilah flicked open a switchblade and pointed it at Angie's cheek.
You see how sharp this is, bitch? I can slice open the side of your face like a watermelon.
Do it.
Angie looked her cousin in the eye. The same color iris. The same almond shape. The same fiery bluster, except Angie had the balls to back it up.
If you don't cut me now, then the next time you see that knife, I'll be cutting your eyes out of your head.
None of you is doing shit. Put the fucking knife away.
Dale's tone of voice should have been a warning, but Delilah knew he would never hurt her. He said,
Search the car.
When she didn't move, he said, Dee, please, search the car. Delilah slapped the handle against the back of her hand and worked the blade closed.
Hey.
Dale banged on the roof, waiting for Angie's attention. She looked at him. Her heart stopped. For just a moment, she forgot why they were here. Dale was dying.
Not eventually, not soon. He was dying right now.
She could see the effects of his organs shutting down. His lips were blue. He wasn't blinking. He had stopped sweating. The color of his skin reminded her of the thick, yellowed wax that she had to scrape off the coffee table if she left the candle burning too long. There was no spark in his eyes, just a dull, weary acceptance. Death shadowed every crevice of his heavily lined face. Angie looked away so that he wouldn't see the tears in her eyes. He said,
Deidre Will.
The alias Angie had written on Joe's birth certificate under Mother. Dale said,
You didn't think I'd start snooping when you asked for the job at 110?
Angie wiped her eyes with the back of her hand. Will's ring was still on her finger. She turned it around so that Dale couldn't see it.
Where's Joe?
Good as dead.
Delilah was rummaging around inside Angie's purse.
I'm gonna stick my knife in that bitch's chest.
Angie snatched the bag away. She asked Dale, Where is Joe? What did you do to her?
She's safe for now.
His eyelids were heavy. Saliva pooled into the corners of his mouth. The gun in his hand was held at an angle.
Whether or not she stays safe depends on what you do.
Angie repeated, Where is she? Dale nodded toward the club. The chain on the door had been cut. The only thing that kept Angie from running was Dale's revolver. He would use it. He wouldn't kill her, but he would stop her.
Damn it!
Delilah yelled. She was rooting around the trunk. She found the go bag, the bottle of transmission fluid.
It's not here, Daddy.
Angie said,
Is that what you call your husband?
Shut up, bitch.
Both of you shut up.
Dale asked Angie,
Where's the iPad?
Nowhere you'll ever find it. Angie had used some of the cash from Dale's trunk to bribe the motel manager again. She remembered thinking, if things went sideways, she wanted to make sure Will never found the video.
Dale said, You forgetting I have your daughter trussed up like a steer?
Angie didn't buy the bluff. You won't hurt her. She's too valuable.
Fig doesn't want her back.
Tainted goods.
She made her choice.
Angie knew this wasn't true. Joe had said it herself. Reuben Figueroa didn't lose. Dale asked, What's on the video?
More money than you could imagine, Angie answered. We can figure this out together, Dale. People don't have to get hurt.
He smiled. You want to share the cut?
Fuck that, Delilah said. Bitch ain't getting none of my money.
Baby, shut your mouth.
Dale didn't have to raise his voice. Delilah knew there were some things she couldn't get away with. He told Angie,
Go get the iPad. Bring it back to me. Then we'll talk.
Angie tried to bargain with him.
You're close to the end. I can see it, Dale. You're going to need my help.
He shrugged, but he had to know he had hours, maybe just minutes before he was gone. She said,
Delilah won't be able to negotiate with Kip.
You said it yourself. She'll take a handful of magic beans. Delilah started to protest, but Dale stopped her with a look.
She can't deal with Kip Kilpatrick. He'll eat her for lunch. You think I'm going to leave it to her?
Angie tasted bile in her mouth.
Who has Anthony?
Your grandson? Delilah laughed. You decrepit old bitch. Got a 12-year-old grandbaby.
He's 6, you idiot.
Angie asked Dale. Where is he?
Don't worry about the kid, Dale said. Worry about yourself.
You didn't. Angie's pulse drummed in her throat, pounded in her head. There was only one other person who scared her more than Dale.
Who did you give him to?
Who do you think?
Delilah started to laugh again. Angie kicked her in the knee. The girl screamed as she dropped to the ground. Dale said,
Angela,
but it was too late. She didn't care that he had a gun pointed at her head. Angie ran toward the building. She couldn't move fast enough. Every step seemed to take her farther away. She yanked open the door. The blackness of the building engulfed her. She couldn't get her bearings. Shadows grew out of the floor.
Joe?
She yelled.
Joe, where are you?
Nothing. She looked over her shoulder. Delilah had gotten back up. She was running at an awkward gait, her injured leg slowing her down. Angie went deeper into the building. Trash was everywhere. Shards of glass cut open her bare feet. Her purse snagged on something. The leather tore open. Her eyes started to adjust. Dance floor. Bar at the back, balcony above. Two darkened windows filtered the moon. There were rooms upstairs. The front door banged open. Delilah. She was an outline against the shadows. She had the switchblade in her hand.
Dee? Dale's voice was faint behind her. We need her alive.
Fuck that, Delilah whispered. Not to Dale, but to Angie. Angie crouched down. She searched in vain for something to use against the girl. She was numb to the sensation of her hands being sliced open. Crack pipes, pacifiers, condoms, useless pieces of nothing. Delilah's shoes crunched across the floor. Angie looked up. The balcony. The rooms, all of them with doors. Only one of them closed. Angie ran toward the stairs. She tripped. Her knee hit the concrete edge of the tread, but she kept going. She had to get to Joe. She had to save her daughter. She had to tell her that she would never threaten Anthony, that he was precious, that she would do whatever she could to protect him, that she would not abandon her grandson to the same fate that Angie had been abandoned to herself. She was almost to the top of the stairs when her foot slipped out from under her. Angie fell hard against the concrete. Delilah's hand was around her ankle, dragging her down. Angie rolled over, kicking, screaming, trying to shake the girl off.
Bitch!
Delilah pounced on top of Angie. A sliver of moonlight caught the glint of the switchblade. Angie grabbed Delilah's wrists. The blade was inches from her heart, long and skinny, surgically sharp. Delilah pressed her weight into the handle. Angie felt the tip of the blade touch her skin. Her arms started to shake. Sweat poured off both of them.
Stop it,
Dale said, his voice still faint. They couldn't stop. This feud had been going on too long. One of them was going to die. Angie was going to be damned if it was her. Delilah was younger and faster, but Angie had 20 more years of rage inside of her. She pushed Delilah's hands down, moving the blade away from her heart. It wasn't enough. Delilah summoned up her last bit of strength and plunged the knife into Angie's belly. Angie groaned. She had managed to twist at the last minute, taking the blade into her side. She felt the cold hilt of the knife. Then Delilah wrenched away the blade and held it over her head, aiming for Angie's heart.
"Stop," Dale ordered. "We need her alive."
Delilah stopped, but she wasn't finished. She slammed the back of Angie's head into the concrete, then ran the rest of the way up the stairs. Angie couldn't follow her. She saw stars. Literal stars. They exploded behind her eyelids. She threw up in her mouth. She felt the vomit slide back down her throat. She was going to pass out. She couldn't fight it. This was how her life was going to end. Delilah killing Joe. Anthony taken by a monster. Angie choking to death on her own vomit. Will. She wanted Will to find her. The look of anguish on his face, knowing that she had died alone without him. A sudden, piercing scream shook Angie out of her stupor.
No!
Joe screamed.
Stop!
The sound was visceral, not the way she screamed when Reuben hit her. It was the scream of someone who knew that they were dying. Angie rolled over. She pushed herself up from the stairs. The sharp pain in her side did not stop her. Dale's staggering footsteps on the stairs below did not stop her. She bolted up the last few steps. She ran across the balcony. A gun fired. The sound was delayed for a split second. Angie felt the bullet whiz past her head. She heard a chunk of concrete fall to the floor. She turned around. Dale was sitting on the stairs. His gun was in his lap. Even from 20 yards away, Angie could hear him panting for breath.
"Stop,"
he said. But Angie wasn't afraid of him anymore. You only feared for your life when you had something to lose. Delilah came out of the room. She was covered in blood. She was laughing.
"What did you do?"
Angie asked, but she knew what the girl had done. Delilah clapped together her hands as if she could clean them.
"She's dead, bitch. What are you gonna do now?"
Angie looked at Delilah's empty hands. She had left the knife inside of Joe. Her only weapon. Her only defense.
"You stupid cunt."
Angie grabbed Delilah by the arm and swung her toward the open balcony. There was no sound. Delilah was too terrified to scream. She teetered, almost catching herself, but then she lost her balance. Her hands shot out. She clawed at the air. She finally screamed as she plummeted down. Her body hit the ground with a sickening crunch. Angie looked at Dale. He was still sitting. He held his revolver with both hands, taking the time to aim because he wasn't going to warn her this time. He was going to kill her. Angie darted into the room. She closed the door behind her. The knob came off in her hand. She pushed against the door. It was latched closed.
"Angie,"
Dale said. He had managed to stand. She could hear his feet scuffing the stairs.
"Don't drag this out."
Angie closed her eyes. She listened. He was out of breath, but he wasn't shuffling. She had locked herself in this room. He had 4 more shots in his revolver. 4 more chances at close range to hit a target a blind man could hit in his sleep. There was only one thing to do. Blood cupped Angie's bare feet as she blindly searched the room. She found Joe in the corner. Her body was propped up against the wall. Gently, Angie felt for the knife. She found the handle sticking out of Joe's chest.
Angie,
Dale said. He was closer. He knew he didn't need to rush. Angie sat down beside her daughter. Cold concrete curled up through the blood-soaked floor. Dale had been killing Angie every day of her life since she was 10 years old. She wouldn't let him have the final blow. The knife that killed her daughter would be the knife that killed Angie. She would drive it into her own chest. She would bleed out in this dark, empty room. Dale would open the door and find her already gone. Slowly, Angie reached for the switchblade. Her fingers wrapped around the handle. She started to pull. Joe groaned.
Joe?
Angie was on her knees. She was touching Joe's face, stroking back her hair.
Talk to me. Anthony,
Joe said.
He's safe, in my car.
Joe's breathing was shallow. Her clothes were slick with blood. Delilah had stabbed her over and over again, yet somehow, Joe was still breathing, still talking, still fighting to survive.
My daughter, Angie thought. My girl. I can stand up, Joe said. I just need a minute. It's okay.
Angie reached down for Joe's hand. It wasn't there. She felt smooth bone, an open joint.
Oh, God,
Angie breathed. Joe's hand was nearly severed from her wrist. Only tendon and muscle kept it attached to her body. Angie felt the steady spurt of blood pulsing out of her open artery.
I can still feel it,
Joe said.
My fingers, I can move them.
I know you can, Angie lied. A tourniquet. She needed a tourniquet. Her purse had ripped off her shoulder. There was nothing in the room. Joe would bleed to death if she didn't do something. Joe said,
Don't leave me.
I won't. Angie took off her underwear. She wrapped the thong around Joe's wrist and pulled as tight as she could. Joe groaned, but the pulsing blood slowed to a trickle. Angie tied off the knot. She listened for Dale. She tried to hear his footsteps. There was a low keening. Angie didn't know if it was coming from Joe or from her own mouth.
Please, Joe leaned into her. Just give me a minute. I'm strong.
I know you are. Angie held her as close as she dared.
I know you're strong.
For the first time in her life, Angie cradled her daughter in her arms. All those years ago, the nurse had asked her if she wanted to hold her baby, but Angie had refused. Refused to name the girl. Refused to sign the legal papers to let her go. Hedging her bets, because that's what she always did. Angie could remember tugging on her jeans before she left the hospital. They were still damp from her water breaking. The waist was baggy where it had been tight, and she had gripped the extra material in her fist as she walked down the back stairs and ran outside to meet the boy waiting in the car around the corner. Denny. But it didn't matter that it was Denny, because it could have been anybody. There was always a boy waiting for her, expecting something from her, pining for her, hating her. It had been like that for as long as Angie could remember. 10 years old. Dale Harding offering to trade a meal for her mouth. 15. A foster father who liked to cut. 23. A soldier who waged war on her body. 34. A cop who convinced her it wasn't rape. 37. Another cop who made her think he would love her forever. Will. He had said forever in Mrs. Flanagan's basement. He had said forever when he put the sunflower ring on her finger. Forever was never as long as you thought it was. Angie touched her fingers to Joe's lips. Cold. The girl was losing too much blood. The handle of the blade sticking out of her chest pulsed against her heart, sometimes like a metronome, sometimes like the stuck second hand on a clock that was winding down. All those lost years. Angie should have held her daughter at the hospital. Just that once. She should have imprinted some memory of her touch so that her daughter didn't flinch the way she did now, moving away from her hand the way she would move away from a stranger's. They were strangers. Angie shook her head. She couldn't go down the rabbit hole of everything she had lost and why. She had to think about how strong she was, that she was a survivor. Angie had spent her life running on the edge of a razor, sprinting away from the things that people usually ran toward. A child, a husband, a home, a life. Happiness, contentment, love. All the things Will wanted. All the things Angie had thought she would never need. She realized now that all of her running had led her straight to this dark room. Trapped in this dark place, holding her daughter for the first time. For the last time. As the girl bled to death in her arms. There was a scuffing noise outside the closed door. The slit of light at the threshold showed the shadow of 2 feet slithering along the floor. Angie closed her eyes again. Dale had done the same thing when she was 10 years old. Stood outside the closed door to Deirdre's apartment. Waited for Angie to open up. Deirdre never hesitated to open the door. She didn't care who was on the other side so long as he could bring a needle full of heroin closer to her arm. Her daughter's would-be killer. Her own murderer. Open the door and let him in. Angela, Dale said, the same now as he had then. The door rattled in the frame. There was a scraping sound. Metal against metal. The square of light narrowed, then disappeared as a screwdriver was jammed into the opening. Click, click, click. Like the dry fire of an empty gun. Gently, Angie eased Joe's head to the floor. The girl groaned with pain. She was still alive, still holding on. Angie crawled around the dark room, ignoring the chalky grit of sawdust and metal shavings grinding into her knees, the stabbing pain beneath her ribs, the steady flow of blood that left a trail behind her. She found screws and nails, and then her hand brushed against something cold and round and metal. She picked up the object. In the darkness, her fingers told her what she was holding. The broken doorknob. Solid. Heavy. The 4-inch spindle stuck out like an ice pick. There was a final click of the latch engaging, the screwdriver clattered to the concrete floor, the door cracked open. Angie stood up. She pressed her back to the wall beside the door. She thought about all the ways she had hurt the men in her life. Once with a gun. Once with a needle. Countless times with her fists. With her mouth. With her teeth. With her heart. The door opened a few more careful inches. The tip of a gun snaked around the corner. She gripped the doorknob so that the spindle shot out between her fingers and waited for Dale to come in.
Angela, he said, I'm not going to hurt you.
The last time he would ever tell her that lie. She grabbed Dale's wrist and pulled him into the room. He stumbled, twisting around. Moonlight played across his face. He looked surprised. He should have been surprised. 40 years of tricking out little girls and not one of them had ever turned on him. Until now. Angie drove the doorknob into the side of his neck. She felt the resistance as the rusty spindle tore through cartilage and sinew. Dale's breath hissed out. She tasted the decay from his rotting body. He fell back onto the floor. Blood splashed the front of her legs. His arms flopped open, his lips parted. His eyes were closed. One last breath seeped out. Not a snake hissing, but a tire slowly deflating. The moon had shifted outside the windows. A long shadow crept into the room, caressing Dale's body in darkness. Hell had sent a minion to claim his miserable soul.
Angela.
The name snapped Angie out of her daze. She had never told Joe her name. She was using the name that Dale had called her.
Angela,
Joe repeated. She was sitting up. She held the knife steady with her hand.
I want to see my boy.
Anthony.
Christ, what was she going to do about Anthony? Help me up.
Joe struggled to stand. Angie rushed over to help. She couldn't believe the strength left in the girl. Joe said,
I need to see my boy. I have to tell him.
You will. Angie ignored her own pain as she helped raise Joe up. They both staggered a few steps before Joe walked forward on her own. Angie could see the knife now, pushed into the hilt. Joe's hand was dangling from her arm. The tourniquet had slipped, blood spurted out, flicking across Dale's body. More blood covered the floor. Joe slumped against the wall. Joe said,
Just give me a second. I can do this.
She couldn't do it. She slid to the floor. Angie ran to catch her, but it was too late. Joe slumped to the ground, her eyes closed. Her face went slack. Her lips still moved.
I can do this.
Angie made her cop training take over. Basic triage, no time for an ambulance. She had to find a way to slow the bleeding again or Joe would never make it down the stairs. There was the tarp in her car, duct tape. She took a step, then stopped. This was a crime scene. Two sets of footprints, two suspects. Angie had her Hakes police boots in the car. Reuben Figueroa would be looking for his wife, his son. Angie needed to cover Joe's tracks. Dale's car, the bricks of cash in the trunk. Delilah's credit cards, the APD, the GBI. Will. Rippy was his case. He would be called here. He would find Dale. He would find a lake of blood. Angie knew him. She knew how his mind worked. He wouldn't stop digging until he had buried them all in a grave.
Angela,
Joe whispered.
Is it Anthony?
Zzz, zzz. Dale's phone was vibrating in his pocket. Joe said,
Is it my boy? Is he calling?
Joe's boy was being held by someone who had him pressed against a wall, a hunting knife to his neck. Angie flipped open Dale's phone. She pressed it to her ear. There were sounds, a child crying, a cartoon playing too loud. A woman said, Hey, asshole, I'm losing my patience here. You want this little boy or should I sell him for parts? Fire burned its way into the pit of Angie's stomach. She was 10 years old again. Frightened, alone, willing to do anything to make the pain go away. Dale, the woman waited. You there?
Mama?
Angie's 10-year-old voice came back into her mouth.
Is that you?
She laughed her low, husky laugh.
Yeah, it's me, baby. Did you miss me?
Present day. Chapter 9. Will pressed his phone tight against his ear. He heard Angie's voice echo in his head. It's me, baby. Did you miss me? Was this the Xanax? Will looked at his phone. Caller ID blocked. He sat up. He looked around the chapel like Angie might be there. Watching him. Laughing at him. He felt his mouth moving. He didn't hear any words coming out. Will, her teasing tone was gone. You okay, baby? Take a breath. Take a breath. Sarah had said the same thing to him downstairs, except this time he wasn't having a panic attack. He was filled with a blinding, uncontrollable rage. You fucking bitch. She laughed. That's more like it. Rippy's club. Angie's purse, her gun, her car, her blood. And now the body in the funeral home with her wedding ring. She had set him up. She had gotten herself into trouble, and whatever way she'd managed to claw her way out had presented an opportunity for her to fuck with his head. He said it again. You fucking bitch. She laughed at him again. Will would have punched her in the throat if she were standing in front of him. He would find her. He would do whatever it took to track her down and strangle the life out of her worthless body. The chapel door opened. Faith walked in. Will took in gulps of air, trying to swallow down his fury, his outrage, his resentment. Faith opened her mouth to ask him what was wrong. He motioned for her to be quiet, saying into the phone, Angie, why did you do this to me? Faith's jaw dropped. She froze in place. Why? Will demanded. You faked that scene at Rippy's club. You made me think you were dead. You made me think it was your body in the basement. Why? Angie was silent, though she'd had an entire day to contemplate her answer. Angie? Will's voice cracked. He felt raw, desperate to hear an explanation. Tell me, goddammit, why did you put me through this? Why? Angie drew out a long, exasperated sigh. Why do I do anything? She rattled off some familiar answers. I'm a fucking bitch. I want to ruin your life. I make you miserable. I don't know what you look like when you're in love because you've never been in love with me. Will turned away from Faith, afraid to show her how much he could hate somebody. That's not good enough. It'll have to do for now. He couldn't handle this. He was going to crack, end up dead on the floor if he let himself feel all the things that were boiling up inside of him. He tried to think like an agent, not a human being who had just been skull-fucked by a psychopath. Whose body is in the basement? Not yet, Angie said. First, tell me what it felt like when you thought I was dead. Will forced his fingers not to crush the phone. What do you think it felt like? I want you to tell me. She waited for him to speak. Tell me how you felt, and I'll tell you who's in the basement. I can find out myself, he said. We're running her prints right now. Too bad her finger pads are cracked open. We can get DNA. She won't be in the system, Angie said. You've been working this case. Other cases, too. What if I told you I could break everything wide open right now? Only all you have to do is tell me how you feel. I don't want your help. Sure you do. Remember how I helped you the last time? I know you were grateful then. Will couldn't have that conversation in front of Faith. Did you kill Dale Harding? Why would I confess to murder now? Will felt exhaustion pulling at him like a sickness. Now? As in not like the other times? Careful, baby. He covered his face with his hand. This wasn't happening. She had hurt other people like this, but never him. He couldn't stop asking, why?
Why did you do this?
I wanted you to know what it would feel like to really lose me. She was silent for a few beats. I saw you today. Don't ask me where. The look on your face when you thought that I was really dead. I bet you wouldn't miss Sarah that way.
Don't say her name.
Sarah, Angie repeated, because she would not be told what to do. I saw you, Will. I know that look. I saw it when you were a kid. I saw it last year. I know who you are. I know you better than anybody else on Earth. The letter. She was quoting from her own letter.
Who's in the basement?
Doesn't matter. Will didn't know what mattered. Nothing mattered. Why had she done this to him? He had only ever loved her, taken care of her, made sure she was safe. She had never done that for him. Not now, not ever. She asked,
"Has Faith managed to get a ping on me yet?"
Will turned around. Faith was on her phone, probably requesting a trace.
"Josephine Figueroa," Angie said.
"What?"
"The girl in the basement. Josephine Figueroa. My daughter."
"Your daughter."
"Our child, together."
She paused.
"Dead."
Will felt his mouth open. His heart was shaking so hard that he had to sit down.
"The child. Their child. Their baby."
"Angie," he said.
"Angie."
There was no response. She'd ended the call. He put his hand to his mouth. His breath was cold against his palm. Angie had killed him from the inside, slicing into his heart with a surgeon's precision. A child. A daughter. His fucked up genes inside of her. And now she was dead. Faith knelt beside him.
"Will."
He couldn't speak. He could only think about a little girl sitting at the back of a classroom struggling to follow what the teacher said because her stupid father couldn't teach her how to read. She would have ended up trapped in the system, the same as Will. Abandoned, the same as Will. How could Angie be so cruel?
"Will," Faith repeated.
"What did she say?"
"Josephine Figueroa."
He had to force the name out.
"In the basement.
Angie's daughter, Josephine Figueroa. That's her name." "The basketball player's wife?" Faith rubbed his back. "We'll deal with that in a minute. Do you need me to get Sarah?"
"No,"
he said, but Sarah was already coming through the door behind them. Amanda was with her. They both looked worried. And then Faith told them about Angie's phone call, and they looked furious.
"What?"
Sarah demanded.
"What?"
She couldn't stop saying the word. Amanda gripped the side of the podium. She spoke through gritted teeth.
"Did you run a trace?"
Faith said, "We couldn't lock in. She must have timed it."
"God damn it."
Amanda looked down at the floor. She took a shallow breath. When she looked back up, her game face was on.
"Did we get a phone number?"
"It's blocked, but we can pull it on..."
"I'm on it."
Amanda started working her BlackBerry.
"Was Charlie able to match the fingerprints?"
"No," Faith said. "Her finger pads were too..."
"Cracked," Will said. "Angie knew that. She said the DNA won't be in the system."
Sarah said, "Angie's blood type was at the scene." She kept shaking her head, completely baffled. "Her purse, her gun. I don't understand. Why would she do this?" Faith asked, "Would Angie's daughter have the same blood type?" Sarah didn't answer. She was shell-shocked, the same as she'd been this morning.
"Daughter?"
Amanda asked. Will couldn't answer. Amanda asked, "In the interest of futility, did Angie mention why she did all of this?"
"She's a monster," Will said, the same words that people had been saying about her for over 30 years. At the children's home, at foster homes, at the police station, Will never argued them down. But he never believed them, either. They didn't know Angie. They didn't know the hell she had been through. They didn't know that sometimes the pain was so bad that the only thing that made you feel better was lashing out at other people. She had never lashed out at Will before. Not like this. "If it really is Josephine Figueroa, we'll have fresh prints in the system," Faith said. "She was arrested last Thursday. She had oxy in her car. I saw it on the news." Amanda asked, "Angie said this woman is her daughter?"
"Yes."
Will couldn't tell them that Josephine was his daughter, too. He had to get some clarity. He needed time to think. Angie had lied about so many things. Why should he trust her now?
"Figueroa," Amanda said. "Why does that name sound familiar?"
"Her husband is Ruben Figueroa. He's a basketball player."
"Marcus Rippey."
Amanda spat out the name like a bad taste in her mouth.
"This entire day has been a giant circle leading directly back to him."
Will stood up. "The patrol car can access footage from the street cameras." He didn't wait for a response. He jogged up the aisle. He was outside and in the parking lot by the time they exited the building. Will pulled open the cruiser's passenger side door and got into the car. The uni gave a startled bark. Will pointed to the laptop mounted on the dash. "I need the footage from every camera in the area."
"I was just pulling that up for your boss."
The uni punched some keys.
"These are the ones you want to see. I got two different angles, one from the street that runs in front of the funeral home, one that runs along the back."
Faith opened the back door and slid into the car. Amanda knelt beside Will. She told the uni,
"Dunlop, tell me you found something."
"Yes, ma'am."
Dunlop pointed to the screen.
"This is right after the funeral van left at 8:22.
The prank call for a bogus body pickup. Not a joke from another mortuary student, but a ruse to get Bel Camino out of the building.
"This is where the car first comes in."
Dunlop turned the laptop around. Will saw the street corner, the rear entrance to the service alley. The night vision was fuzzy. The streetlights weren't helping. At 8:24:32, Angie's black Monte Carlo SS turned into the alley that ran behind the funeral home. The driver's face was a blob. A flash of blonde hair under a black hoodie. The car disappeared from the camera's view as it rolled up the paved alley. Will hit the arrow key, fast-forwarding the video to pick up the car again. 6 minutes passed before the Monte Carlo drove back down the service alley and turned onto the street. Faith said, "She went to the back door where the elevator is. She came back out. 6 minutes is enough time to put a body in the freezer." Dunlop reached over and tapped some keys. "It picks up again here on the front street view." The Monte Carlo turned into the lot, using the entrance that was 15 feet away from where they were. Angie's car glided into the handicapped parking space. The driver got out. The roof of the car was about 4.5 feet off the ground. The woman was around 5'8", close to Angie's height. She was overweight, not like Angie, or maybe she had bulked up her clothes. The long-sleeved hoodie must have been sweltering, but she kept the hood on, head down, hands deep in her pockets as she walked up the street. Faith asked, "Is it Angie?" Will shook his head. He was out of the identifying Angie business. "Could be Delilah Palmer," Faith guessed. "Blonde hair, but Delilah changed her hair a lot." Amanda said, "Dunlop, where do you pick her up next?"
"Nowhere. She's either lucky or she knows the cameras."
He tapped another few keys. He fast-forwarded and reversed through several different street angles before giving up.
"She could have walked under the bridge, jumped into a car on the interstate, headed up to Tech, downtown. There are lots of blind spots where she could have parked another car, or had somebody waiting for her."
"Hell," he shrugged, "she could have jumped on a bus." "Check the buses," Will said, because
That sounded like something Angie would do. Or maybe not. He was the last person who could predict her behavior. Amanda's knees popped as she stood up.
Tell me about this Josephine Figueroa.
Basketball wife. Faith got out of the car. Oxy. That's all I know.
Will said, the husband, Reuben Fig Figueroa, one of Marcus Rippey's alibi witnesses for the night of the rape. He's a power forward, very physical, rebounds well on defense, Kip Kilpatrick's client.
This hole just keeps getting deeper, Amanda said.
Here's her DL. Faith showed them her phone. She had pulled up Josephine Figueroa's driver's license. Will studied the photo. Dark hair, thin and tall, almond-shaped eyes, olive skin. She looked like Angie from 20 years ago. Did she look like Will? Did she have his height? Did she have his problems?
Amanda said,
"Inasmuch as you can tell anything, the photo resembles the woman in the basement."
Faith said, "She's a carbon copy of Angie." Will said nothing.
You too, Amanda waved over Collier and his partner.
They had been so quiet that Will had forgotten they were there.
Ing. Take off those stupid sunglasses. I put you on missing person reports. Josephine Figueroa. Did she come up?
Fig's wife?
His face was small without the glasses.
No, she wasn't in any of my searches. I would recognize the name.
Amanda told Faith,
you'll come with me to talk to the husband, see if we can get an ID, figure out whether or not the wife is missing in the first place. I don't trust Angie as far as I can throw her, and believe me, if she was here, I would throw her.
Collier said,
the wife's a pill popper. She did a 2-day stint in the Fulton lockup, got out Saturday, supposed to be going to rehab this morning. And now she's at a funeral home with knife wounds in her chest.
Amanda tucked her hands into her hips.
I don't trust any of this. Angie's misdirecting us for a reason. She's buying time so she can make her play.
What's the play? Collier asked. This is a lot of dead bodies for a game.
Amanda said,
it's only a game to her.
Josephine has a kid. Faith held up her phone again. I found the husband's Facebook page. Anthony, 6 years old. Anthony. Joe Figueroa's son. Angie's daughter. Will's grandson? The picture showed a small boy with a furtive smile.
Look at the shape of his eyes, Faith said. Those are some strong genes.
Were they Will's genes, too? 1989. Angie was stuck in a group home with over a dozen other kids. Except for that time when she wasn't. Faith said, there's not a missing 6-year-old white boy on the wire. We'd know about it immediately.
Ing said, that's for damn sure.
Collier, Amanda said.
What's your progress on locating Delilah Palmer?
I was gonna tell you before we found her rental car abandoned in Lakewood, wiped clean.
Damn it, Collier! Faith slammed her hand on the trunk of the cruiser. You found her car? I have to hear about your goddamn gas station hot dogs, but you can't text me when... Will realized that Sarah had disappeared. He scanned the front of the building, the lawn, the parking lot. He walked toward the street. She was behind her BMW, leaning against the bumper, staring into the distance. The overhead light put a halo around her. Her expression was unreadable. He didn't know if she was upset or concerned, or afraid, or furious. They were ending the day exactly the same way they had started it. Will walked away from the noise and the screaming and maybe even his job, because he didn't care about any of them anymore. He told Sarah, "Let's go home." She gave him the keys. He opened the passenger door for her, then walked around the front and got behind the wheel. He was backing out of the space when she took his hand. Will felt his heart lift in his chest. This wasn't the Xanax. Sarah's presence soothed him. Earlier tonight she had been willing to walk away from him, not to hurt him, but because she only ever wanted what was best for him. He said,
I don't think I can talk about any of this right now.
She squeezed his hand.
Then we won't.
Tuesday. Chapter 10. Faith paged through her notebook as Amanda drove them to Ruben Figueroa's house. Her columns were hardly worth reviewing. Will had been right when he'd told her there wasn't a case to be built. Faith saw what he had seen. A bunch of arrows. A bunch of unanswered questions. Nothing added up. Even when you threw in the name Josephine Figueroa, the dead woman was just another arrow that indirectly led back to Marcus Rippey. Maybe she should try to link them to Angie. Her eyes started to blur. She looked up, blinking to clear her vision. The streets of Buckhead were deserted. It was almost 1 a.m. Faith had been dead asleep in front of the television when Amanda had called her to the funeral home. She could barely recall dropping Emma off at her mother's house. She was so exhausted that her brain hurt. But this was the job. There was no such thing as a reasonable hour to notify a man that his wife was dead. Not that Faith was absolutely certain that the woman at the funeral home was Joe Figueroa. She certainly could be the woman in the driver's license photo, but Angie's involvement skewed everything. Faith's policy toward liars was to always discount everything they said, no matter how much sense their story made. It wasn't easy. The human brain had an annoying need to give people the benefit of the doubt, especially people you cared about. For instance, Faith was trusting Will when he said that Angie hadn't told him anything else important, even though he had spent a hell of a lot of time on the phone with her just to be told a victim's name. Amanda said, "Your mother used to pin her notes up on the wall so that we could see all the moving pieces." Faith smiled. The pinholes were still there. "Do you think that Joe Figueroa is Angie's daughter?"
"Yes."
"Who's the father?" She didn't get an answer, so she suggested the obvious one. "Will?"
"I'm not so sure about that."
Amanda slowed the car. She pulled over to the side of the road. She put the gear in park. She turned to Faith.
"Tell me what you know about Denny."
"Denny?" Faith shook her head. "Who's Denny?"
"Short for Holden," Amanda explained. "Though, Denny is 2 syllables, Holden is 2 syllables. I suppose that means it's not short, just less pretentious."
Faith was too tired for semantics. "Let's just stick with Collier."
"Start from the beginning. What did he do? How did he present himself?"
Faith had to pause for a moment so that she could put together her day. It seemed like an eternity had passed since she'd picked up Will at the animal clinic this morning, which was technically yesterday morning because it was past midnight. She told Amanda about the first meeting with Collier and Ying outside Rippey's club, the interminable amount of time she'd spent with him at Dale Harding's, the texts that told her nothing, the tedious observations about his personal life, the constant sexual innuendo, the reluctance to carry on an adult conversation about the case. "I don't trust him," Faith admitted. "He keeps pushing this Mexican heroin cartel angle. He didn't tell me about finding Delilah's car, but he told me about every useless whore he talked to in Lakewood." Amanda confirmed.
"Ing said they were handling a domestic call when they got routed to the nightclub."
Faith strained to recall his exact words. "He said it was pretty violent, which means they were probably at the hospital. Grady is close to Rippey's club, about a 10-minute drive at that time of morning. It would make sense for them to take the call."
"The 911 came in at 5 a.m.,
Amanda reminded her.
"Would you volunteer to investigate a dead body at a warehouse at the end of your shift?"
Faith shrugged. "Dead cop. The unis recognized Harding. You'd push your shift for a cop."
"True,"
Amanda agreed.
"What else is bothering you about him?"
Faith struggled to articulate her gut feeling. He keeps showing up. He was with Will when he found the Jane Doe in the office building. He drove him home. He was there tonight at the funeral home. What was he doing there?
Collier and Ng are our APD liaisons. They're working parts of the case. It makes sense that he'd get the call about the car.
I guess. Faith tried to pluck out the obvious answer. Maybe Collier's just an idiot who keeps falling up. His dad was on the job. He's obviously got some juice. Amanda said,
Milton Collier was on the job for 2 years. He took a 51 off a 24, lost two fingers before he could call a 63.
Faith accessed her arcane knowledge of 10 codes from Amanda's soup can and string days. Collier's dad had been stabbed by a crazy person and lost some fingers before backup arrived. She asked Amanda,
And? Milton clocked out on a medical disability. The wife was a schoolteacher. They made ends meet by taking in foster kids. Dozens at a time. Collier was one of them. Eventually, they adopted him.
Huh, Faith said, because Collier had overshared just about everything, down to his twisted nutsack in high school, but he hadn't mentioned that he'd been in the system the same as Delilah Palmer. The same as Angie, too. Faith asked, Were Collier and Angie ever in the same home together? Like when she was 16 years old and pregnant?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Amanda didn't give the answer, but Faith knew she would find out. Amanda asked,
What else did Angie say on the phone call with Will?
It was brief, she lied, because the call had lasted just under 3 minutes. I'm sure she spent some time taunting him.
Why is that, do you think?
Because she's a terrible human being. Amanda gave her a sharp look.
She's cunning is what she is. Look at our day. Angie had us running around in circles. East Atlanta, Lakewood, North Atlanta. Will was all over Midtown. You were stuck at Harding's. I was at Kilpatrick's. What's more, Angie has knocked Will out of the equation, which shows brilliant strategy.
Will knows her intimately.
He could be our best ally in helping us figure out what Angie is really up to, but she has rendered him completely useless. You saw how he was in the basement.
Faith had seen how broken Will had been, and what's more, she hadn't been able to take it. He had been making a weird, whooping sound, like he couldn't catch his breath. Faith ran from the room so that he wouldn't see her crying. She asked Amanda, You think Angie's fucking with him so that he won't figure out what she's really up to?
If I were teaching a class on mind games, that play would be part of my curriculum.
God knew Amanda could play some mind games. Okay, Angie's screwing with them. To what end?
She's buying time.
For what?
That's the $64,000 question, isn't it?
What exactly is Angie Pulaski up to? Faith didn't think she would ever find the answer. She was so tired and so stressed out that she doubted she could tie her own shoes right now, let alone figure out why Angie Pulaski did the awful thing she did. Amanda said,
Walk me through it.
Reluctantly, Faith looked down at her notes again. Harding is murdered Sunday night. Angie stages the scene to make it look like she, Angie, was murdered, but it's actually Joe Figueroa, who probably shares her mother, Angie's rare blood type, B negative. For once, Amanda hadn't been ahead of her.
Do you think Angie murdered Joe?
Faith wasn't sure. She's a monster, but I can't see her killing her own child.
Neither can I. But Harding could have killed Joe, then Angie killed Harding. Or tried to with the doorknob.
Amanda asked,
What happened next?
Angie takes the body out of the club. She torches Dale's car, which sounds like something Angie would do if she was pissed off. And she'd be pissed off if Dale killed her kid. Faith couldn't even contemplate a real-life scenario with her own children. There would be salt in the ground for 1,000 years. The 911 comes in Monday morning at 5. Then Monday night, Angie hands us Joe's body at the funeral home
and calls Will to torture him. Sarah puts Josephine's time of death around noon.